well, for me, I ain't gonna lie.
ELIFA is the Education Foundation. It's a non-profit organization that supports teachers and students in ELIF ISD. My name is Liu Wenzhou. I'm the PR specialist and the liaison for the ELIF ISD Education Foundation. And joining me today, I have a very special group. I'm going to start from my right side. Please introduce yourself.
My name is Michael Bennett. I went to ELIF in 2004.
Thank you. Welcome.
I'm Michael Bennett, senior on the ELIF Education Board.
Welcome.
I'm Martellus Bennett, the best of the Bennetts, and I graduated 05, ELIF Taylor.
Welcome.
My name is Toby Wigway. I graduated 05 from ELIF LC, yeah, the Mighty Rams.
Welcome.
My name is Cody Bailey. I'm the vice president of the ELIF ISD Education Foundation, and I graduated in 99. LC Ram, huh?
Come on.
Thank you so much for joining us today. I'm going to start with a question for Mr. Bennett. How do you feel having four children here, alumni from ELIF ISD?
The students that we have in ELIF, what they do, they go here, they come back, and they give back to the community.
That's right.
That's a great thing, and I'm enjoying it. I love to see it. I love to see my sons do it. I love to see Toby do it, Cody do it. All these guys came through ELIF, and they have a lot of passion for this district. So that's why I have passion for this district as well.
And for people who don't know, you used to be a board trustee in ELIF ISD, and now you are coming back as a board member for the ELIF ISD Education Foundation. And we know that you are not getting any pay. So why are you coming back?
Because I love this district. My wife works in this district. Yeah. Kids went there. I have three kids graduated high school here, all from ELIF Taylor. I've been knowing Toby since he was very young. So I just love coming back, giving back to the district. I love these kids. I just love doing stuff for this district.
Thank you. And I have a question for Cody, because as you mentioned before, you don't get paid being part of the Education
just
Foundation.
Just keep on rubbing that in, okay, Lee?
Let me say it one more time.
Please.
And you are the VP. So why are you supporting our district?
Yeah, absolutely. Because, I mean, it's the district that poured into me. It helped raise me, introduced me to things that I find of interest, including sports, and kept me, you know, busy. And when I left after 24 years, I decided that I wanted to come back and continue to pour into the community that raised me. So here I am. And as far as leadership, that's the skill set that I bring. And that's what I want to continue to bring to our community and help build other leaders. So that's why I'm here.
And we're very happy to have you here today. But I'm going to go to the Bennett brothers. How do you feel about supporting your father during our new pickleball tournament?
I think it's important. I think as a child, your parents pour so much into you, right? You don't really ask them what their dreams are, what they're aspiring to do. They spend so much time investing in you. So when you get older, you want to find ways to invest in your parents, into their dreams and the things that they're trying to do within the community. I think, you know, the stuff that my father's always done in the community has empowered me to go into the world and challenge the world and to change things that I see that's not being just, or things that I can do through my own foundation or the work that I do around the world. It's because I saw my father doing the work that he was doing, and my mother too. So it's really dope to be back, and I just moved back to Houston. So the opportunity to be a part of something that's, you know, empowering the children in ELIF is really important to me, because, you know, I was a kid in these chairs before, so I know the challenges that, you know, children face and the opportunities for them to be around people, to get knowledge, to learn their experiences is super important, because that's really what it comes down to in life, right? A lot of people think it's about your net worth, but it's really about your network and being able to connect to people and find ways to grow your brand, being able opportunities to grow your knowledge and just have connections throughout the world. It starts at these moments like here, when you have these tournaments and these foundations, or people who are vice presidents, people who are presidents, people who work in ELIF. You look at them and just saying, oh, this is just somebody and they're just working. But then you find out, oh, he was in the Marines. He was doing this. You start finding out about people's stories and you find out that there's some type of synergy. So that's why it's good to support these events and support your parents, because they see that every child has an opportunity to succeed, and he's still pouring into them.
Thank you.
That was good. It was a little long-winded, but it was
yeah,
good.
Yeah, I mean, to piggyback on that, exactly what Michael said, but I believe that at some point, everyone should turn their education back to cultivate the soil in which they grew up in. So for me, it's really about, we've been around the world extracting information extracting knowledge, extracting new ways of thinking, new ways of doing things. So instead of living in a community where everything gets extracted from it, we come back and to plant new seeds into the soil in which we were raised in. And with my dad, we realized that, like, both of my parents are community parents. Mm-hmm. Like, they know all the kids. They knew it wasn't just us. Like, everybody was at our house. They were rooting for everyone at the games. They still go to games. My dad be talking to my kids. I'd be like, how you still know a kid from high school? I don't even talk to him no more. Matter of fact, I don't even know if I like him, you know. But my dad, you go by Christmas at my parents' house and you got classmates at your parents' house that you never talk to because they still look at your mom as a mother figure in their life and your dad as a father figure in their life. So I think it just shows that we come from a household that believes in the village, and now we are a part of the village. And what do we have to offer the other kids in the village is where we are right now. So I'm always happy to support my dad. He's always there. And when he was running for school board, part of his campaign I told him to do was to be there. I think that's the biggest thing that any parent can do is be there. And my dad has always been there, and so has my mom. So I've been fortunate for that.
And Toby, as we noted before, you are not a son of Mr. Bennett, but you grew up with a very close relationship. So why are you coming back to A-Leaf?
Two reasons. I really respect Mr. Bennett as a father and as a man. And then I really love A-Leaf. I really truly believe that A-Leaf made me as well-rounded as I am and has made me have the character, perspective, outlook, discipline, all of the, you know what I'm saying, et cetera. That I approach every aspect of life with.
What's your best memory in A-Leaf ISD?
Now, I got a lot of good memories. I can't really necessarily hang my hat on one that's appropriate for the kids, but it's good.
Michael, did you have a special teacher?
Miss Drury, she was my English teacher. She was like one of my favorite people. She like used to always, you know, introduce us to books and kind of just authors. And she was one of my favorite people to remember from A-Leaf is Miss Drury. I don't know if she still works here, but she was one of my favorite teachers.
Well, hold on. If we're doing that, Mr. Brown was my first and second grade teacher. Yeah, he one really got me into reading. And Miss Moore, my fourth grade. And then Miss Williams, and ninth grade. Ninth grade, history.
Holy, what's
she
about
the best. And she unfortunately left Elsick and went to Taylor, but
she picked a better school. Just like the Papa John's man when he left Pizza Hut.
What about you, Cody?
Yeah, I got to give shout outs to Betty C. Lewis. You know, Miss Lewis was my fourth grade teacher, and she was like a mother figure. She was the one that saw me, you know, and give me an opportunity to, you know, stand up and have a voice in front of people. So when she was able to do that, it was something that a moment that I thought that, you know, I was kind of by myself and no one really saw me, but she saw me. She gave me an opportunity to do that, and I just kept going. So,
Martellus?
I had a lot of great teachers. In elementary, I had a teacher named Miss Marmaduke, and she was really cool because they used to have these comic strips called the Marmaduke comics with the dog in it. Mm-hmm. So she was one of the first people to introduce me to comics because she used to always have them in her class. And if you did something well, she'd give you these comics. And then Mrs. Schultz, Kim Schultz, was my English teacher in high school, and it was one of my better classes. She introduced me to writing at a high level, which I still do to this day. And then Ms. Meredith and Kim, I know them on first name basis now, because I still talk to those three teachers the most, even now in my adulthood.
You have your own publishing company, correct?
I do. I'm working on my 12th book.
Come on.
So I write films. I have a new animated series at Disney based on my children's books as well. On Disney Plus and Disney Junior. But my favorite teacher at A-Leaf is actually my mom.
Come on.
And I think my mom has the biggest influence on my writing because when I was a child, if I used to get in trouble, she used to make me write these papers based on what I did. And then my papers became very fantastical, and she never questioned the idea of dinosaurs or aliens showing up while I was doing something bad, and I just kept writing these stories. But I would say all my teachers influenced A-Leaf overall, just the melting pot of cultures, learning about different stories outside of myself, like whether there was, you know, we had kids who taught me stories about Buddhism and then other stories about just all these people from around the world. So I wasn't just caught up in a singular way of telling stories. I had my mind open for all the different types of stories based on all the cultures in A-Leaf. So that helped me a lot just growing up here and playing with the kids. Just playing, like, that's the best way to find stories is to go outside.
And we talked before, you're coming back and you're going to be sharing your book with our 48 campuses, correct?
Yeah, good. I'm trying to get all the schools to buy my books.
No, that's not how you say it.
I'm straightforward. Really, what I'm really looking to do is, I'm from A-Leaf. I grew up in A-Leaf. I'm an author from A-Leaf. I think it's really good to have those who come from the school district in which you're teaching the next generation of writers to bring out the previous generation of writers to influence them as writers as well.
Yes.
And I feel very special today because I have another author today, Kobe.
I've only written one book, okay?
Come on, that's all it takes.
Yeah, month, right?
Yeah. What was that?
Like in the month, like 45 days?
Shoot, a lot longer than that. Mm-hmm. But my book is Letters to Airmen. It's a great book. It's about my journey, the first four years of my Air Force career, and being able to share those lessons with those that are aspiring to be in the Air Force or those that are already serving. So, yeah, it's a leadership book. But, that's what I have going on as well.
And could you please share when you came back to ELSIC to share your book with the students?
Yeah, absolutely. Got a great opportunity to go to the junior ROTC class. I spent all day where I was able to share with them my story, but also leadership lessons and also give them an opportunity to take the book home with them and let them be able to take it. And hopefully they'll learn something from it as well. And it's also good to see that other junior ROTC programs that are adopting this book, turning it into curriculum as well. So it's been great. But that was my way of continuing to give back and just share love.
And you're also an entrepreneur, and you're going to have another event with A-Leaf ISD, correct?
That is correct. Yes, in April, you all mark your calendar. We have our Youth Entrepreneur and Workforce Development Program in partnership with my company, Equilibrity, where we uplift entrepreneurs and workforce development opportunities for internships for our students. We have that coming up in April. We'll be talking about entrepreneurship with a pitch competition. Yes, you will be able to walk away with some cash flow in order to support your entrepreneur endeavors, as well as we'll have financial literacy. And we'll have a workforce being presented where you'll have folks in STEM, technology, arts, just a list of professionals that are offering opportunities for kids for internships. So, yeah, that's what we have going on. In partnership with our very own A-Leaf ISD, we'll be here at the CTE.
Woo! Mm-hmm. That's fire.
Toby, before we mention about some of your favorite teachers, any of them influence your music career?
Don't lie.
Yeah, my teachers.
Actually, I did that for him.
All right.
Here it is.
Now, I would say the majority of my musical influence came from some of my teammates and classmates, because we would freestyle and they would introduce me to, we're not about to freestyle now, brother. Yeah, they would introduce me to so many different types of music and things of that nature, and teammates helped influence my musical palette and just exposed me to a lot of different artists and stuff like that influenced me to do kind of what it is that I'm doing today.
Which one is your favorite album and why?
Oh, okay. The Love Below, The Miseducation of Lauryn Hill, no specific album, but my favorite artist is in Houston was Big Hawk, Fat Pat, and Chameleonaire.
And we have another alumni who was part of one of the Netflix show.
Mo. Okay.
He's not here today, but could you please share a little bit about your experience?
Yeah, Mo is my much older friend. He's my much older, almost 50-year-old A-Leaf graduate who is an extremely phenomenal comic, director, writer, actor. He's done, some blockbuster films. He had his show on Netflix, Mo, where he just literally show people his whole upbringing in life growing up in A-Leaf. And it's the first ever, I don't know if y'all know, the first ever show that was shot A-Leaf on Netflix. Yeah, people with Hollywood budgets usually go to Hollywood to shoot their stuff. He shot all his stuff in Houston.
And could you please share a little bit about your nonprofit, the Team Genie?
Huh. Mm-hmm. Come on, I ain't mad at you.
She does. She's a professional. Okay. She's not a podcaster. She's a professional publicist.
Yeah. So I started it. Yeah, I started it after college when I didn't make it to the league like them, and I came back. And the first thing that I wanted to do was get back to my community. And my mom thought I was in love with poverty. Yeah, because I wanted to start a nonprofit. She couldn't wrap her mind around how I could graduate from college, have no job, and want to start a nonprofit. But I did. And we did a whole lot of stuff for the school. We did a whole bunch of different initiatives, Christmas initiatives, Thanksgiving initiatives, and programs within the school where we centered everything that we was doing on edutainment, which is entertaining forms of education. I thought I made up the word, but it was already a word before. Yeah, it was. I looked it up afterwards, but
Michael, talking about non-profit,
I didn't know the transition was gonna happen that quick.
The Bennett Foundation, right?
Yeah. I have I work on several different foundations: Bennett Foundation, Champions of Change. I'm on the board of a couple other companies, and for charity, I think for me with the Bennett Foundation, it was kind of based on it was one of those things that I kind of got thrown into. I was working with Honolulu on food and access to food and lack of access to proper food nutrition. So then the foundation kind of was dispersed out of that and started building education around nutrition and reaching out to schools. So that we reached out and started having a curriculum. Then we started, branching out to Seattle and then to broader schools around the community. And then we took that all the way to Native American, to Haiti, reservations, just different places around the globe. But my foundation was kind of based on just community, right? It was like working in the prison system, just finding ways to impact kids and communities globally. And I think with the Champions of Change, it was more about how do we connect with other foundations and build collaborations in between. Like one person can't solve the issues that happen in the world. So much with, being a football player, it's like you really can't win without having teammates. And I think we think about a global issues, you really can't, one person can't solve it. It's about how do we get out of our silos and become connected to other people and finding ways to give them resources. So through Champions of Change, we've kind of done that on every level, whether it's cancer, prison, school to prison pipeline, food, nutrition, design, black design, Freedmanstown here in Houston, everything. So I think that's one of the better things that I've been a part of, because you get an opportunity to work with these champions of communities and throughout the United States. One of my favorite is Asmarette in New York, One Love Community Kitchen, where they're just building beautiful refrigerators around the city of New York and, having access to food for people, no fee, no nothing. And working with Safeway has allowed us to bridge that gap, I think. So that's kind of what I do when the work around charity work is just finding ways to just do more. And I think that's really challenging in these times, is really kind of not being a one individual, but really collaborate with other people. So,
Mr. Bennett, this is a question that I need to ask, because we just had the Super Bowl a few days ago. So how did you feel having two of your sons being champions with the Super Bowl?
Well, it was great because, Michael playing for Seattle, Martellus won the Super Bowl with the New England Patriots. So I have a affiliation with both teams. Although deep down, I have a real connection with the city of Seattle. They grew up in Seattle. We lived there for a while. I had another cousin that played for that team. And so the team was kind of they were very, really close guys. Every time one had an event, they all showed up. So me and my wife became part of that. And so I was kind of rooting for Seattle. But I wanted the Patriots to do well because Martellus played there. But I was rooting for Seattle. And glad they won.
I have two boys on my own. Now they are teenagers. But when they were little, that they had this little accident and you are rushing to get something, no? But how did you feel when you see them having like an accident during the games?
Well, so watching football, it's a gladiator sport. It's a tough game to play. And so when I watch the game, I kind of watch the game. I don't like watching the game with other people because I just don't. And Michael's been hurt in games. Martell's been hurt in games. So But we love it. They love it. But just watching them have collisions out there, it's two things going to happen with them. He's a defensive end. He was a tight end. They're going to have contact on almost every single play. And so just watching them play, hoping they're safe after the game, checking them, talking to them. So it was rough watching that. But, you know, you got to teach the kids the right way. You got to have good coaching and people that understand. You know, you don't want coaches who want kids to collide, especially at young ages. And I see a lot of teams in A-League to have these smaller schools, these AAU teams, football teams. And I went to practice one day, and the coaches was really preaching hitting. I mean, these kids was just, I'm like, wait a minute, bro. Like, I mean, they don't need to do all that. They're too young to be hitting that much in practice. They need to try to curtail that. And so watching them play, it was tough to watch them have big hits because Martell's 6'7", 270, but it's got a guy on the other side, 6'7", 270 as well. So it wasn't easy, but they did well. So
to piggyback on that, though, I think that, like, with you and your kids or all kids, we have to let kids get hurt. Not necessarily through the sport, but the way that we design in playgrounds now, too safe. There's no risk, there's no reward. So they're not really understanding the ability to fall down and get back up, because now we hover over them, try to catch them before they fall because they're so precious. I mean, babies fall off couches all the time. They pop right back up. They very durable. But then they're not building up an acumen for the difference between being hurt and being injured. Everybody gets hurt. Every time you fall is not an injury. You can be hurt and still go live on your life. So I think it's important, even like with my own daughter, sometimes she'll fall and I'll just step over her while she's down and keep moving. Nah, because we have to be able to decide. Sometimes I have to rush over there and pick her up, but if I rush over every single time, I ain't going to be able to pick her up all her life. So sometimes you got to pick yourself up. I think it's important to establish that. If you look at any animal in the wild, and we are animals, people forget that human beings are mammals. We are at the top of the food chain. We don't have caves no more. We have beautiful buildings like this one right here. But at the same time, I think it's important for us to have kids build their durability, fall off the monkey bars, go up the slide backwards, and build better playgrounds. Playgrounds where I know everyone wants to sue everybody for everything, so we build playgrounds not to be sued. So it becomes to the detriment of the child and the community, because the playgrounds don't get used because kids conquer the playgrounds at an early age, so it becomes destructive. The only way they try to make the playground become something that is not. So like when we redesign the playgrounds, are we thinking establishing playgrounds in our communities? We have to think about what the kids in the neighborhood, you know, like to play and design around their play patterns versus this universal play pattern that is not for every single community across the world. So I think a big part of what we're doing or what we're thinking when we think about how kids play or what they're playing, and when we develop in these play territories, we need to really think about the community in which we're designing for, so it allows them to break through and overcome and build community. Right now, every playground is empty. Every playground looks the same. Every playground is used for a limited time. So it's a waste of resources, it's a waste of money because of terrible design and terrible design thinking.
Thank you.
I agree with that too. On another fact too, is that I feel like everybody preaches to kids that, you know, all we see is the finished product when it comes to success. And I think there's a process in which kids got to understand that there's a lot of failure in between the success that is happening. You know, like, you look at somebody like Elon Musk, it's like, oh, he's the richest person in the world. But there were so many times you read in his book that he was bankrupt, you know what I mean? Or he failed a company. But to let kids know that just because you fail at something doesn't mean that you don't have an opportunity to succeed at the next thing. It's like, how many times can you fall down to get back up to continue to chase your dream? I think when you, I was telling my daughter last night, it's like, just because there's an obstacle doesn't mean it has to be a wall. You should look in the mirror and see it as an opportunity to succeed, because you can, if you can take that challenge and turn it into something that you want. Understand that failure doesn't mean that you can't succeed. You know, you got to turn that failure into some fuel to move you forward and propel you. I think that's really, really the hardest thing. Like you said, falling in business, it's, you know.
100%.
You want to. Sometimes it's down. You
absolutely.
Know?
But sometimes you got to. Yeah. The gotta goal is, up, I think we avoid failure when we should be trying to fail as fast as possible. The faster I fail, the quicker I could pivot to get to the thing I'm trying to get. It's just like, oh, that wasn't the right thing. What can I take from this? Because a lot of times what happens when you go from one thing that you feel like is a failure, people don't really understand that there's transferable wisdom in every time you fail.
Right.
What can I take from these to enhance my possibilities of me winning the next time and the next time and the next time. So each one of them is building a foundation of thought, a foundation of belief, and a foundation of possibility. If I just avoid every obstacle in life because I feel like it's difficult, and but the thing I'm really saying is we start this from a young age of like avoiding difficulty for our children because we are afraid of them falling or something, when in historically human beings are built to fail. Like our entire life is built off of the imaginations of those who came before us. So if they can't fail, then we can't have new possibilities, because failure is where you see new possibilities, and the blue ocean strategy, right, versus the red ocean strategy.
And I want to welcome Clarence Anderson, one of our board members as well. Thank you for coming, Clarence.
You're welcome. Thank you.
And since I have you here, I know that we did a podcast a few weeks ago, but I wanted to ask you how the foundation is supporting the teacher with the grants.
So we gave away over $25,000 in teacher grants to, I think, over 25 teachers in the district just this last month. So they are starting little projects or specific little projects in their classrooms and on their campuses that support the school and what they're doing across the district.
And Cody, how is the foundation supporting the scholarship for our senior students?
Yeah, absolutely. So we're able to support our students by, one, scholarships. We were able to give, over the last 2 years, over $200,000 in scholarships to, yeah, that's amazing, right?
Yeah.
Over $200,000 in scholarships. We've also, like Clarence just mentioned, the $25,000 that go to teachers for mini grants. In order to bring innovative programming into the classrooms that are going to, you know, basically go directly to our students, right, and continue to elevate them in their learning experience. We also have opportunities where that money that we've been raising through our incredible partnerships with community members, businesses, and our educators also support our pantry, our uniform pantry. So that's how, you know, those that are in need, we're able to help them out in trying times for our families. So those are ways that we're able to give back. And we're able to do that through our annual golf tournament, which mark your calendars, September 28th. It's going to be a great event. Again, where last year we were able to raise over almost $150,000 from that event that goes directly to our educators and their staff and our students. So we have that. And then we got this inaugural pickleball tournament, right? So when I hear these gentlemen talk about competition, again, we're looking at a champions, right? Super Bowl champions. We're looking at Grammy nominees. I mean, these are folks that are interested in competing, but also not just against other people, but competing internally in order to make themselves better every single day in their craft. And that's what brings us to this pickleball tournament, Lee, that I'm really excited about, that we have Mr. Bennett over here leading and running point. And these gentlemen, let's talk about a little bit of that competition, right, as far as pickleball. What do y'all think? Have you played?
I've participated in pickleball on several occasions.
Okay.
yes, I enjoy the game. It's a fun game. The thing I like about pickleball is that it's accessible across generation, yeah. Like meaning don't matter how old you are, how young you are.
Yeah.
Like I could play with my daughter, she could play with her grandmother, her grandparents ain't that old, but like, you know, well, my mother-in-law is, but like, you know, they can play to each other and still have a competitive and fun play experience. So I really like that about the universal play experience that pickleball has to offer. Well, like golf takes a skill and you're bad and, you know, you have to play it every day to be good at it. Pickleball, you could just, if you got good hand-eye coordination, if you're Bennett, you can do it. It's just in our blood, you know what I'm saying? It's just like, hey, man, you know what I'm saying? Like, I know my daughter go out there, she makes me proud. She ain't got to go out there and play all the time because she a Bennett, you know, it's just in her blood. Okay. Yeah, but I enjoy the game. I do think it's a fun game. I like playing against civilians, regular people that didn't play sports. I love playing against civilians, and I like talking trash to old people. That's the funnest part, like just because once you're on the court, all that age and that respect and all that thing, it's still there, but it's to a minimal. Like, I ain't gonna cross the line, but I'm going to be on your behind the entire time. So I'm excited to go out there, talk trash. I'm excited out there to play with my nieces, the kids in the community, other people. Like, you play with my mom, could be on my team, and we could be competitive. I like competing with my mom. Like, me and my mom are good teammates and things, so I like doing those types of things. So I'm excited about the generational play that it brings in. So anyone in the community, regardless of what's going on, can come out and play. And I think that's the really cool thing about pickleball.
Thank you for the support. What about you, Toby?
I agree. I think it's a very easy game to pick up and become dominant, especially if you are an athlete. If you have any type of athletic ability, it's a pretty simple. It's not like tennis where it requires a different like skill set to get the ball over the net and stuff like that. So it's just learning the rules and having some form of athleticism will give you an excellent opportunity to compete. And I played it a couple of times, and I don't play it as often because I don't want to spend all my time trying to be dominant on the court. It could take over.
I don't think you had to be athletic though, man. We played in Seattle and they had a dude, he was the least athletic person in the world.
Skills.
Oh my god, it was so it was just maddening. Like you'd be out there like, he can't run, he can't turn fast, he got terrible hips, but he's the champion. I'm like, who is this guy? Where do y'all find him? Yeah, he was really good. Not in peak shape, not even, he didn't even have a dead body. He just like nothing was great about any of it. When you look at him, you just be like, there's no way this guy should be beating me. Yeah. But he was. He's beating everybody. And everybody was mad. Top athletes in the world. We sitting right there pouting.
That's good.
And I'm going back to Mr. Bennett. You are the co-chair of the fundraising committee. And we agreed to start this pickleball tournament to support our students and teachers. But people are asking, like, how is going to be? This is like a mixed group. What are the ages?
So we have 4-H groups, 10 to 14, 15 to 18, 19 to 50, and 50 and over. So, but you can play in any group you want to play with. So if you say, for instance, if you're a 16-year-old kid and you want to play with your mom, that's fine. You and your mom can play together, but you have to play at the 16 age level, not the older level, right? Because we want to keep the competition, even though in this game, I don't think, you know, age matters, because as I played with a lady in Hawaii,
and be kicking butt.
She's in her 70s, and I was like, oh my gosh.
She active.
So age really don't matter in this game, but we did that for the prizes, so when people can win certain age groups, they come some of the prizes that we're offering for the winners. That's why we have the age groups, but anybody can play, and you can mix match how you want to do it. Just come out and have fun with us. It's going to be a great time. We're going to have Toby there. We're going to have Michael Martellus Bennett there. We got Cody there. We got Clarence there. We got other people that's going to be in the community. Tiffany Thomas may be there. She may bring in some stuff in for us. So we're looking forward to it, and we just hope everybody come out and just have a great time.
Try to get Disney there too.
Hey, we can get Disney there. We'll have AJ. Hey, AJ is Saturday probably playing on some of the screens. So that's gonna be fun.
Come on.
We have food trucks there. We have three or four committed food trucks right now, so we're gonna have food there. We're looking for volunteers, and your food is complimentary if you volunteer to come out and help us. You can set the gym up. We're gonna be at Hastings High School, the South Gym and the North Gym, depending on the number of players. We're gonna have the bleachers out, so people can come sit in the bleachers and just watch if they just wanna come watch. Order food, so we're gonna have that done. It's gonna be fun.
When is the date and the times?
So the tournament is March 28th. It's gonna be from 10 till 2.
What about if I register as a single player?
If you register as a single player, we can partner you up with somebody, but if we have enough singles, we may just let the singles play against each other. But we can partner you with somebody, like you register as a single and it's another person registered as a single, we can match you guys up and I'll let you guys play that way.
She hitting you with the facts, FAQs, the frequently asked questions.
That's what I was about to say.
Facts. Those facts. You'd be like, frequently asked questions. Let's get the answers to those now.
Me and Cody got to be on a singles team, and then we can beat any one of the Bennett brothers and Toby. What we got to do.
It's almost like, you know, sometimes, you know, you got couples when you go out on a date and you got a third wheel with y'all, you know what I'm saying? So it's just like, y'all welcome to come too. I think sometimes just showing up, if you're single, you might make new friends.
That's right.
It's a chance to meet new friends, get out of your comfort zone, you know, be a part of the community. I think sometimes being alone or being by yourself keeps you from integrating into the community fully. So you kind of try to avoid situations like that. But you should jump out there and you'll find, you might meet somebody. You might meet the love of your life.
Right.
Hey, that's right.
Playing a little pickle.
I want to make a point too. Like, this is we are putting this on for the A-Leaf Education Foundation, of course, for the A-Leaf community. Mm-hmm. But anyone is welcome that's from Houston or wherever you're from. You want to travel down and come play with us, come play. Just register and play.
And if you don't want to register, just send your money.
That I was about to say,
you could just send, you could just send money, and there's different packages. The gold package is $1,500. The silver package is $100, and the bronze package is $500.
Yeah.
But if you got less than that, you could send that in. You could donate $2, $5, $100. I'm just saying that if you got a nickel to give, a dollar to give, it's going for a good cause. Like, so, you know, reach into your pockets. Come as you are, reach out and send a donation your way. We are building up the community. We're supporting students. We're supporting teachers. And I'm not a part of the government side of this, so I just get to tell you to you straight. Yeah.
So how many games can we play?
So it's there are time limits on the game. So once you get into the tournament, you'll play until there's a champion in your division.
Yeah.
We also going to have an exhibition. So we got some really good players coming from Seattle. So we're going to, as we said, we have the stands out. So we're going to put everybody in the stands and you can watch these four guys play. These guys are
it's crazy.
Really, really good.
Wow.
And so Cliff Averill is going to be one of the guys that's playing. He's bringing a guy down with him.
Zach.
Zach is.
They're professionals.
Zach is a professional, so they're going to be here. So people can learn the game and watch these guys play as part of the tournament. So they won't be in the tournament per se to win the prize. They're just going to put on a show for us to watch.
They're like the Globetrotters of pickleball.
Yes. Right. These guys are good.
We're in for a treat.
So it's going to be fun.
And we didn't mention it before, but we have a lot of students on the other side.
Yes.
Do we have any questions?
I'm Anderson Ayala.
Yeah.
You said you listened to multiple artists growing up, right?
100%.
Anything with Sauce Walker?
I got a song with Sauce Walker that Swiss Beatz produced. It was on Godfather of Harlem, like season 3.
Well, did you listen to him growing up?
No, he wasn't around when we was growing up.
No. You're going to be surprised. When I was younger, I think the clique that I was in, G-Mob, was actually beefing with Sauce Walker's clique. And we used to, like, try to fight each other in the streets.
Mm. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, but now it's
all now cool. Y'all both got the sauce.
Yeah. Yeah, so now it's all cool. Now we got songs together.
That's awesome.
That was my only question.
Yeah, that's like, what's your name?
Anderson.
You got Cash App?
I got Cash App, yeah.
Make your donation.
I don't got Cash App.
You don't?
Nah.
How you get money online?
Zelle.
All right, cool. Give me your information. I'm going to give you $50 for asking the question first.
Right, damn.
You,
come on, man.
Yep. All right. See what happens?
Do we have more questions?
Dang, man. I wish I did have a question. Yeah.
$50 for a question? I got questions.
I still
I got questions for everybody.
I watched Toby's... a lot of his videos that they put together. I want to know who choreographed those things because they'd be amazing, man. I watch y'all come out. Your wife be looking all good. The kids be all spiffed out. Like, who do this?
Spiffed out.
They really good. That's a word that might
be. I like it.
You know, that's a good question. I'm going to follow up after that question,
okay,
too.
Yeah, no, it's usually me or my homegirl Carmen who leads up all of the beautiful black women that you see dancing with us, which we call the Black Angels. So it's either me or Carmen. Now, I started having to do it only because of necessity. When we first started, I was broke. So I ain't have no money to pay no choreographer. So I had to get active with all the little skills that I had. And then once I developed the type of dancing that we were doing, the type of choreo that I wanted, like I had Carmen come along and kind of master it and take it to another level. So.
It's really good. I like y'all. I like your style with that.
Me too.
Yeah. To that point, though, I was going to ask which one of your performances, one is one your favorite, and then two, how do you pick those artists that sing those melodies in the background for you?
Okay, so for the first question, the BET Awards performance that I did. For Fafa, during the pandemic was my favorite, and then we picked it. So before I'm anything else, I really love music. So a lot of the singers that sing with us, I just really love how they sing. So I just pick whoever I feel like is the best. I'm like, oh, come on, hey, will you? You know what I'm saying? I just ask them to come sing with me. So I think David Michael Wyatt is one of the best vocal talents in the world.
Mm-hmm.
And then everybody else has a very, very unique talent. So, and it's stuff that I love to hear.
The back door on this, man, these guys, they be like, hey, they get told me and my wife to come to karaoke.
Come
and
on.
I get the and I get the karaoke, and it's a room full of musicians, like just talent. I'm supposed to get there and sing, and I'm like, bro, like, I'm even worse now. I'm not as bad usually, but now I'm trying to raise up to the level of the room, and it's like I'm just terrible. So, you know, I was like, it was like they had me, and there were all these fantastic singers that he knows.
But you had charisma, though. I had stage presence.
Yeah. I do. I have all that. I got the it factor.
What's your go-to song, then?
My go-to song is probably... I don't really have a go-to. I don't do karaoke or nothing.
He did Hey There, Delilah.
Yeah, I did Hey There, Delilah. So, yeah.
Any other questions from the audience? Nobody got another question? Oh, come on.
All right. Yeah, he said, give me my 50.
My name is Dave Angelis, and I got a question for you. I heard that you wrote 12 books earlier.
I did. Well, I'm writing my 12th right now.
How were you inspired, and how you continue doing that?
It's a job for me. I wake up every day and I write. I don't wait to be inspired. I think that those who look for inspiration are constantly looking for inspiration instead of doing the work itself. So for me, I just wake up and write. And a lot of my work is rooted in investigative research. So like whatever I'm interested in at the time or whatever I'm learning at the time or have ideas. And so I kind of stay open to all stories. I think there's stories everywhere in the world, and then I just find which stories or which ways I want to write about those things. So for me, really, what I'm looking at when I write is more about writing what I know, writing where I'm at, and writing where I want to go at the same time. So I don't really look at writing as like this inspirational thing. I look at it as a daily job where I just sit down at my desk and pick up my pen and I write or investigate or research and learn about things. And then I take those things and translate them into my own language and create stories around them. So like, I like to read philosophy. I read books more as if there are conversations with the people I could never have conversations with. So sometimes I could read a book and I'd be like, Cap, this is wrong. I don't agree with this person. And then I would write my argument in the margins of the book. And then if I don't agree with them enough, I'd be like, I feel like I should write on this subject because I got a different point of view on the thing.
That sounds like inspiration.
Nah, I feel like it's more of a, I don't think that's inspiration. I think that's just conversation.
With yourself?
Yeah, and the person that's writing the book.
Gotcha.
When I was a younger writer, it was really about being inspired in some ways. Like my children's books were inspired by my relationship with my daughter, and also inspired by the lack thereof existence in which the field I wanted to see my daughter in. So then that was inspiring. But as I got older, inspiration is not needed for me to wake up and write. So now, like when I'm young, I kind of don't know what to write, don't know what I want to say. Now I know what I want to say, how I want to say it, but I need to be educated enough to have a good argument or discernment. And when I write lots of essays and collection of essays is how I make my books. And a Tomonoshi essay is rooted in the idea of anthropology, sociology, psychology, all in one. So I don't like to point the finger, so we have to either be in the side of the machine and pick the mechanism of the machine apart while writing the essay. So it's never really like, once we see this, it's never that. We see it because we're inside of it, and then the reader doesn't really know what's happening until they finish the essay. So I write from a standpoint of being inside the thing in which I want to write about. So it's more of a scientific approach than it is just like this artistic approach at the same time. Now, I use my artistry in my writing. Like, I like poetic words, and I like to make, I like really pretty sentences. Like, I have a book called The Tomonoshi Way, and a lot of my sentence structures were based off of Ikebana flower arrangements. So how short and how beautiful can I make it with 3 points? So the entire time, I'm using the idea of an Ikebana flower arrangement to structure my sentences. Yeah, I write books about everything, though.
I'm gonna give you $25 because you got his name wrong.
So make sure you get your Zelle.
Get your Zelle. Yeah.
At least he didn't call me.
So the pickleball term is March 28th, 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. at Hastings High School, South Gym. So I would love to see all your kids there. Show up, come out. Even if you don't play, just come out and have fun with us. You know, enjoy some good food. As I said, we got at least 4 or 5 food trucks going to be there. So just come out and have a good time and enjoy the community. Get to know some people.
And as we mentioned before, ALEAF ISD is a very diverse and multicultural district.
100%.
So I appreciate you coming here today, especially because we're celebrating the Black History Month.
Come on.
Yeah. Are we, or is it like, I don't know. Are we celebrating Black History?
We're here.
We are celebrating, man. Make sure y'all look up past Martin Luther King. Don't just look at Martin Luther King. Let's go down to
Malcolm X.
Did you know that black people, this is just a fun fact. Last thing. This is the last thing I'm going to say. I ain't going to give you all the information. I'm going to say this. Did you know that black people started an idea of paramedics? Because they could not be served in the community, so they had to create the ambulance to be able to serve their black community to keep people from dying. Yeah. And then they went to teach white people how to do it.
It was 10 guys in Philadelphia.
Come on.
Like, it's so crazy, but that's just like one of those things. It's like, wow, that was crazy. And then, you know, the craziest thing is they had to develop the stoplight so, you know, saying they could run through it. Both of those are black inventions.
I want to appreciate you coming here, board members, and yes, Toby, Martellus. So please join us on March the 28th. We're going to have our first pickleball tournament at Hastings High School. My name is Li Wen Su, and thank you for joining us today.
This has been an AMP production.